Hello, everyone. Welcome to the third episode of the Laura Nero podcast, also known as Passion in Silence. This is a special episode because we forgot to make an episode.
No, we didn't forget. It's been on our minds, but it's been a very hectic month so far. We're currently recording this at the end of March, and we had every intent to get an episode out last Friday, but, you know, life happens. So here's something, a special episode, something that we had talked about, I think, in the last episode, but and we're also recording from not our usual studio, with air quotes around that. So the audio quality might be a little different because we don't have our special microphone with us, but I'm using my MacBook, and hopefully that will suffice. But if you notice a drop in audio quality, that's why.
Yeah, we're actually sitting in a classroom right now because we came to campus to do homework, and then I looked up at Michael and I said, oh shit, tomorrow's Friday and we haven't made an episode since the last one, which was like 4 weeks ago. So we're doing this very impromptu.
Yeah. But I think you all will enjoy this special episode. So yeah, we're not going over New York Tendaberry quite yet. That'll be our next one, which we'll get to that eventually. I don't know. Hopefully 3 weeks from now, I would imagine we could get something together. But this week, we're going to be going through our top 10 Laura songs of all time, our favorites. We've both come up with our own separate list of our top 10, and we have not shared it with each other. So this is going to be really interesting. So, yeah. That's what we're doing. We're going to go ahead and get started.
I can start. Since this episode was kind of my idea, and I already had a list made beforehand.
Okay.
Because I'm really interested in this conversation. Yeah, just so you know, we haven't heard each other's top 10 yet. No. And we haven't done a ton of preparation besides make lists and reflect on our favorite Laura songs. So with that said, my 10th favorite is December's Boudoir from Eli and the 13th Tendaberry. I love this song because of how sensual it is and how sporadic it is at the same time. Like I mentioned in our last episode, I feel like this song is completely overlooked, and it's definitely one of the best songs in her catalog. What do you think of that?
Well, I already kind of voiced my thoughts on that song. It doesn't stand out to me. I said that last time. I don't know. It just, like, it doesn't hit me, apparently.
I think it is such an explosive song that it is just definitely a highlight for me because of how memorable it is, even on an album as memorable and groundbreaking as Eli and the 13th Tendaberry. This song stands out to me.
Okay, well, I disagree, but that's okay. So, looking at my list here, which I forgot to actually order, I put the 10 songs in here, but I didn't actually, like, move them around to how I wanted them, because it's so difficult to, like, narrow it down to, like, what's number 10 and what's number 1, because I love all 10 of these songs.
I mean, a lot of this could change on, like, a daily basis, but this is how I felt in the moment, so I feel like it's authentic enough.
Okay, well, okay, let me look over my list. Okay, so my number 10, I'm going to have to say, I'm going to go with Louise's Church from Walk the Dog and Light the Light, which Yeah, that's her final album that was released while she was alive, in 1993. So I'll just give a little brief history of what I know. So that song focuses on a painter named Louise Nevelson, I believe. And there was a story or something that I read about Laura went and saw, like, some of her paintings or something. I'll definitely have all the details fleshed out once we get to the episode about Walk the Dog and Light the Light. But I just, she starts with, like, a spoken introduction, and then the song really kicks in. And it just, like, she also mentions Billie Holiday and other kick-ass women. And it's just, like, it's a women's anthem, I think. And I think that's what I like. I love strong women. I think that's probably partially why we love Laura, is because she's a strong woman, speaks her mind, writer and singer, played the piano on everything except the first album, just like a strong woman. That basically sums it up. So I guess the song, I mean, it's this, okay, so the album is kind of like very of the time, and it has not aged very well, I think, production wise. Yeah. It's very 90s, like middle of the road type of music. Adult contemporary, whatever, which is fine. But, like, that song in particular, it grooves long. I like it. And, yeah, those are my thoughts on that. What do you think of that?
That song's not anywhere on my list at all. Not to say I don't like it. I just don't find myself listening to that song or that album very often. But maybe with time it'll grow on me.
Maybe, because, like, I didn't listen to that album initially when I was getting into my Laura fanatic era. So, starting out, I was like, eh, I'm not really feeling this. And then the more I listened to it, the more it grew on me. And it really, lyrically, it's a classic Laura album. Production-wise, it hasn't aged very well. But, yeah. Okay,
so my number 9 is Money from the Her Smile album. What do I even say about the song? I feel like it is just a nice, like, mid-70s, mid-tempo rocker. It starts out with a bass guitar, and it's very, like, ambient and kind of groovy. And I really like the lyrics. Let me just pull them up real quickly. She says, money, money, money. I feel like I'm a pawn in my own world. I found the system and I lost the pearl. It's breaking me down. Well, it won't shake you down. You just make the sound go round and round and round and round. And she repeats that throughout the song. And I don't know, I just love it. And I know she wrote this song after an encounter with David Geffen, because of some record deal or something like that.
I think it was about later on when he wanted her to sign with his label, I think Asylum Records.
Yeah.
And he had Joni Mitchell signing on, and he wanted Laura to be, like, the first one. And then she ultimately decided, nah, I'm going to stick with Columbia. And he was pissed off about it, which is, like, whatever. But then I think they signed some sort of publishing deal, and he ended up with, like, half the money from the deal or something like that. Which, of course, once again, we'll get into that once we get into the Smile album. But I'm pretty sure that's what that song's about. But
I think so.
It's universal, though, because we're still dealing with these problems.
We always will. And I think I like this song particularly lately because I've been struggling with the fact that, like, one day I'm going to graduate and I'm going to have to work for money, and, like, I could really get into it, but, like, the whole nonprofit industrial complex, I'm really struggling with the thought of, like, profiting off people's problems. It's really bothersome to me. And then I wish I could just volunteer and do mutual aid work my whole life and not have to work for money, but that's just our society, and I feel that Laura shares that frustration with me.
So. Yeah, because, like, she never really did it for money.
Exactly.
And, like, if you look at, like, for example, when she lived in Connecticut, it's not like she lived in a mansion. It was a cottage, and that's what she wanted to do. And I'm sure she had enough money to probably buy a big, huge house, but that wasn't what she was about.
I mean, I'm sure that house was pretty pricey.
Well, yeah, because I believe some religious figure that she knew, no, it was actually his cottage, I think.
Oh, it's...
And he had, like, retreats. I'm gonna have to...
Okay, I'm just gonna say it. We've seen Laura's house, her former home, in person, because, well, we were in Connecticut because we have friends up there.
Yep.
And we were in Danbury, and we just decided, you know, why not see where she lived for a time in her life. We didn't, like, go in. We just drove by.
Oh, God, no.
And it's a very beautiful house. I would live in that house. It's very unique. There's huge windows. It's, like, one story. It's, like, sitting atop a lake, and there's, like, a bridge. No,
it's,
like, a
stream. It's not a lake.
Yeah.
But, okay, yeah. Yes. So, we have a friend up in New Hampshire, and to get home... And to go out that way, you got to take, I think it's I-78, and it goes through Connecticut. So we were coming back one time after visiting our friend, and I don't know. We thought, why not stop in Danbury and see the house? But no, we did not, like, drive up and, like, harass the people that live there now, because I mean, that's just, like, annoying. I wouldn't want someone to do that to me. So.
Now, if she still lived there, it'd be a different story.
Oh my god, no.
I'm kidding, kind of.
Okay.
Okay, so what's your number 9?
She'd be like, get out. She'd be like, you need to back up. Okay, so my number 9, I'm going to stick with Walk the Dog and Light the Light Again, which I know I just shit on the production of this album a little bit, but my number 9 is the Descent of Luna Rose, which I know that song is about her menstrual cycle, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that. I think that's cool of her to write a song about it and speak very frankly, even though she uses, like, metaphors and imagery.
Yeah.
But I love the way it just chugs along, and her use of her own, like, background vocals. Like, at one point, she says every day, but it's like four Lauras layered over each other, but they're off by, like, a few seconds, so it's like every day. I don't know, something about it. It's just, like, it's cute. It moves along, and I believe she ended up naming one of her music publishing... No, I take that back. She was going to name her own record label Luna Rose Records. And actually, I think she was going to name the album Walk the Dog and Light the Light. I think it was originally supposed to be named The Descent of Luna Rose, and I'm pretty sure somebody, like, talked her out of that.
That sounds right.
Because they were like, oh, you don't name it after that. But whatever.
Yeah, I love that song. It's not on my list, but I feel like if this was a top 15 list, it might be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that song is such an elegant-sounding song, and such a light-sounding song for an otherwise taboo topic, and I really appreciate everything she does with it. And it just sounds like happy, and it's fun to listen to.
It's a good one for the car.
Yep. Okay.
Number 8. Yeah, what's your number
8? My number 8 is another happy sounding song, and it's My Innocence from Nested. So, what do I even want to say about this song? It's quite fast paced. It has an awesome guitar line. It's probably the closest thing she's ever done to like a disco song, I would say.
Yeah.
It's a really nice, just warm sounding rock song.
I agree. I think it sounds different from the rest of the album, but also it's like consistent, but it's also different. I can't really explain it. I think because it's like so upbeat. And then the guitars at the end. Mm-hmm. Although I wish she like kept on singing, but I do like that song a lot, and it's actually on my list, and I will get to it, but it's not my number 8, but it's close. So I'll talk more about it when we get there for me, but yes, great song. So my number 8 is actually Beads of Sweat from Christmas and the Beads of Sweat. I love the slow intro, and then all of a sudden it like takes off.
Yeah.
And it just keeps on going and going, and you got the guitars wailing.
Do, 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 do. That's what the guitars sound like.
Yeah. Okay.
And like in the beginning, like when they first come in.
Yeah.
And I feel like at that point, she didn't really use that type of guitar so much. Like very strong electric sounding guitar.
Yeah.
Very rock oriented.
It sounds, dare I say, Janis Joplin-esque.
Yeah.
Like some of her harder things. It kind of reminds me of that era, like the late 60s. Mm-hmm. Like electric rock, psychedelic rock, heading in that direction. And the song is about heroin, I think, right?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it is. I think it's about heroin, which is why it, like, goes wild.
I love it.
But, I do love that song a lot.
That's not on my list, but I'm rethinking that decision. But at least we got to talk about it here.
Yeah. All right, what's your number 7?
Number 7 for me is a strange song that I feel like some people really probably don't like. And it's Melody in the Sky from Mother Spiritual. Now, this song, I'm not sure what it's about. And I can't really articulate why I like it. But, I don't know, it starts off and it's kind of slow. But then it unfolds like a flower into this beautiful, like, gypsy-like, I don't know, like, I envision, like, a fairy dancing.
Okay.
Like, in the second half of the song, after she says, "And your kiss can satisfy evening lights." And then, yeah, after she says, "You've got your life, your love, your life, your love." And then she whispers, "I've got mine." Then the piano is kind of slow. And then when she starts saying, "Living day to day, night to night, night to night," she's really like letting loose and like having fun. You can hear it. Mm-hmm. And I really do love this album. And I love the slick 80s production. So this song is like everything good about 80s Laura wrapped up into one song for me.
Yeah. I mean, she only put out one studio album in the 80s, so that was
really
the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I also love Mother Spiritual. I love Melody in the Sky. And I feel that some of the reviews that I've read about that album, they kind of, like, shit on it.
That's why I said that a lot of people probably wouldn't put those in their top 10.
No. And I mean, I don't know. It's her mom out, like her mommy album, and it just like Mother Spiritual, but it just like I don't. She just sounds so relaxed.
Yes, I would compare this album to Joni Mitchell's 1983 album. It's called Wild Things Run Fast. So before that, Joni was making like music that came off very like harsh and brazen almost. And then on Wild Things, she kind of takes a step back and it's a little bit more laid back and focuses more like on her own life while also touching on the political side of things. And that's why I think I love Mother Spiritual so much, is because Laura's taking a step back and looking at the external world and what's going on around her, and we're getting like a little window into her own beliefs about what's going on in the world. So
yeah, it's more political and issue based because you've got other songs on it, like
Right to Vote,
Talk to a Green Tree, Trees of the Ages,
A Wilderness, which if you look into the lyrics is about, she talks about like putting on a coat of armor every day to go out into the world.
Yeah,
which could be interpreted as many things.
Yeah, well, okay, we'll be talking a lot about Mother Spiritual once we get there. So my number, what do we have?
Seven
is My Innocence, which we already kind of talked about. Yeah.
Why do you love this song?
Why do I love? I kind of explained it already, I think.
Oh yeah, you did.
Yeah, it like, because it's so like I said, it's different but consistent with the rest of the Nested album, and it's just like really upbeat, and it sounds like something that you might have heard like out and about, like at a club, yep, maybe on the radio. But unfortunately, as we know, none of her albums, I think after Gonna Take a Miracle, ever really made an impact, yeah, on the charts, which is shitty. Because, like, there's so many good songs that people missed out on. But that's my number seven. What's your number six?
Okay, my number six is Save the Country from New York Tendberry. And I think, objectively, this song is very upbeat and unifying sounding. It talks about politics in the current state of the country without being, like, overt about it. And I think that's why it's such a classic in her catalog. She talks about, we shall overcome. I got fury in my soul. Fear is going to take me to the glory goal. In my mind, I can't study war no more. Save the people. Save the children. Save the country. And in the original version, so not the single version, a lot of the song is just her in a piano and her singing. And then towards the end, it unfolds into this beautiful song with a whole entire orchestra, and she kind of loses it and goes crazy. And I just love everything about this song. Sorry, it didn't make a lot of sense, but
there was a lot going on.
I know.
I do love Save the Country. Did not make my top 10, however.
Wow.
I do love it. I love its message. It's very relevant still.
Always.
It just, like, at the moment, not in my top 10. If you had asked me, let's say, 6 months ago, yes. But, like we've said, it's kind of like, it's an ever-changing list. This is, like, yeah, the top 10 right now, how I feel. And that's influenced by what I've been listening to, what's going on in my life, what I'm feeling, my emotions, my mood. There's a lot that goes into it, surprisingly. My number six, Hands Off the Man.
Okay.
Yes, as you know from the first album, More Than a New Discovery. So, of course, this song, it's famous. It was a moderate hit for Barbra Streisand, and that was actually the first version I heard of it, and I really loved it. And then I found Laura's version, and I love it more, a little bit more. Barbra holds her own with her version, but I do really love the song. It's catchy, it's very of the time. There's other songs that sound like it, that I like as well. So yeah, that's that on that.
Interesting. This is the first song on your list that I don't necessarily love.
Why?
Good question. I think it's a little bit cheesy. Not that there's anything wrong with being cheesy, but for that reason, it's probably not one of my more favorite Laura songs. I think it's a good song. It certainly is catchy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good song, but just not a highlight for me. Now on to number 5.
No. Hold on. Hold up a minute. We're going to take a quick ad break, and then when we come back, we're going to continue the list and some other fun things.
Okay, we're back.
And before we continue our list, we just want to once again thank everybody who has left comments, sent emails, connected with us through social media. We received 2 emails that we kind of just want to highlight really quickly before we continue. We received an email from Barry S. And I'm just going to kind of paraphrase. Basically, Barry said that he has listened to our first episode and was about a third of the way through the second one. And he's been a fan since 1968 and finds it always thrilling to hear young people discuss Laura's music. And he also brought up that he wrote a play with music about Laura's life. And it's actually been produced twice in Tampa, Florida. And if you want to check that out, you can actually buy the play in paperback or Kindle on Amazon. It is called And a World to Carry On, Laura Nero Remembered. I did some skimming. I love the intro. Starts off with Laura's father, Lou, speaking. And kind of sets the scene. So check that out. That's available on Amazon. And then we also received another email from Derek E. Derek said that he is thrilled to have discovered our podcast. Impressed that 2 20-something college students have discovered Laura. He's been a fan since the mid-1970s and has seen her perform several times in the mid-70s and several more times in the 80s, which is awesome. And he also brought up that another book that you can find on Amazon called The Laura Nero That I Knew, Stories from Bandmates and Friends by John Styx, which I did pull that one up on Amazon as well. You can get that as a Kindle or as a paperback. And it actually looks like it has some very interesting information because it looks like it has a set of interviews with people that worked with Laura in the studio and on the stage. So if you want, go buy those things on Amazon. Yeah, so those were just the 2 emails that I wanted to highlight. And of course, we've been getting great comments and everything on our social media. So yeah, if you want to follow us on Instagram, I think we're Laura Nero Pod
Cast. It's Laura Nero Podcast on Instagram. And then on Facebook, it's just called Laura Nero. I'm sorry, no, it's called Passion and Silence, the Laura Nero Podcast. And then you can email us at lauraneropod@gmail.com. And I think that's all of our social meds.
Yeah, I think so. That was weird, social meds, but okay. So yeah, check us out, give us some comments, and review us.
We always appreciate constructive comments and also just compliments.
Yes. So yeah, and of course subscribe and leave your reviews on whatever podcast service you're using. So that pretty much sums that up. I think we're gonna continue on our list. So number 5?
Number 5 for me is Upstairs by a Chinese Lamp from Christmas in the Beads of Sweat. So this song is one of her more grand sounding songs. There's a lot going on here. And I really like her quiet and subdued vocals on this song. It's very intimate sounding. Then you have that amazing flute line, and there's a lot of Asian and Middle Eastern instruments being played on this song, which really sets the mood of being upstairs by a Chinese lamp. Yeah, the song is just really good to listen to. I like how like many of her songs, towards the end, it gets kind of chaotic and explodes, you could say. Yeah, it's just all around a really interesting song.
I do love that song. I do like a lot of Laura's slower songs, and I feel like this, I don't know if I read this or if I made this up in my head, but I'm pretty sure Laura really loved that song, or maybe she just loved performing it. Because I've noticed, like, it's been on a number of, like, collections that have been put out of mm-hmm. her work. And I feel like people cite it as well. Like, people who were influenced by her, that song in particular. Yeah, no, I like it. I like the Christmas and the Beads of Sweat album. I feel like it's more, I don't want to say commercial, but it's
different. It brings in more of a variety of instruments, I feel like.
And I think that is kind of what I like. Like, okay, I love Laura and the piano, but when you start bringing in some of those other instruments, I love that full sound. It kind of gives you like a new listening experience.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. My number 5 is Once It Was All Right Now, Farmer Joe. I talked about this one. Well, we talked about this one in the Eli episode. And I don't want to harp on it too long, but I do love it. It's like kind of all over the place, which is mm-hmm. great. I love that. I don't know. And it's like catchy as well. And it just, it's upbeat Laura. And I do love my upbeat Laura. Because you can put it on and just like drive around, or if you're cleaning the house or whatever you're doing. It's great to listen to. And it really gets you going.
Interesting. Another one that I wouldn't even think to put on my top 10.
Oh.
But I think that song is smushed between so many other good songs on that album that I often overlook it.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's good, and I understand why it would be on your list.
Yeah. All right.
That's really all I have to say about that.
Okay. Number 4.
My number 4 is one that I'm surprised we haven't talked about yet, but it's Eli's Comin' from the Eli album. This song is a mixture of everything you could want in a Laura song. It's got some gospel influence. It's got a little R&B flair, some rock going on. Like you said, it's upbeat Laura. You can put it on and dance, clean the house, drive around. Be crazy. It is just, I feel like it's an entire play wrapped up in one song. And it's just such a classic and so enjoyable to listen to. And I love the words and just, it's an awesome song.
Yeah, I agree. I do love that song. I love how it starts out slow.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going off with its upbeatness, and then it ends again on a slower note. Yeah, it's kind of like a play.
There's a lot of vocal layering. Like, she's talking to herself the whole time, and I really enjoy that.
Yeah. And the background vocals are on point.
Yes, definitely.
All right. My number four is Sexy Mama from Smile. I know. One that Laura did not write. However, I don't know, something about it. It's on the Smile album, and that's the first track. And, like, I just remember when I was starting to get into Laura, and I was just, like, playing random albums all the way through, I started with it, and the way she starts out, strange. And then it just, like, gets moving with the guitar and everything. It just, like...
It sounds like a live performance.
Yeah. I feel like. Yeah, I could see how it would. It's just, like, it moves along nicely. It's got the wonderful, saxophone all over the place and at the end. And it just kind of, like, it's a nice, sensual, sexual song. And it was originally sung by a male R&B group, I believe. And so Laura didn't even change the lyrics or anything, I don't think. And it's kind of like coming from, like, you could almost say that it's like a lesbian anthem. Unless she's singing from the point of view of a man. But you could look at it either way. But I don't know, something about it, it's just like, yeah. I don't know, it just grooves along. It's good. It's really good.
Okay, I see what you're saying. And I agree, but I certainly would not put that in my top 10. I don't know, I feel like it's a little bit too mellow for me. I don't know.
I like it because I like it because it's not too slow, it's not too fast. It's like, and it's so totally not like anything Laura had really done at that point. Like, it was R&B flavored. I think that's why I like it.
That's true. Okay, so my number three is a song that I'm really excited to talk about. Honestly, this could be number one on certain days, but it's To a Child from Mother Spiritual. So like we said earlier, we both really, really love this album. And I think the beauty of this song comes from how she makes such mundane lyrics and words sound magical, you know? This song is obviously addressed to her son. She's singing to her son in this song. And I just want to read some lyrics because it's such a direct song and so intimate that I think it really stands out, both in her album and just her discography. So she starts out by saying, "What is life? Did you write about it in a magazine?" And already the way she delivers that line is just so beautiful and just tranquil. And then later she says, "Is there hope for a mother and an elf on speed?" Which is, like, kind of funny, and especially in her later album, she used humor a lot more. So I love that. And then the lyrics, like I said, are just so tranquil and serene. She even says, "So serene. I read about us in a magazine. Then why are we crying by the washing machine? Let's run away, child, and follow a dream." I don't know how to describe it. I feel like I just eat the song up. It's like a warm, fluffy blanket.
Yeah.
And of course, it has a nice piano line going. I think there's some synthesizers in the back. But what's really up front is her voice. Do I want to say anything else about it? It's one of those songs that I feel like could just bring me to tears if I'm in the right mood. So, number three, To a Child.
I think the song is horrible. No, I'm kidding.
I was going to say, you have to be kidding.
I wanted to shock you. No, I love that song. Love that album, as I've said. It's a great way to start.
Yes.
And it really sets the tone for the rest of the album that, like, this is about my family life. This is about being a mother. This is about things that are important to me as a woman, a mother, a feminist, and all that. No, I love that song. But I prefer the version on Mother Spiritual versus yes. the one that she redid for, I think, first a Lullaby album, and then it ended up on Walk the Dog and Light the Light. But she performed that song a lot live. Like, and she would use the slow arrangement more so.
I think that just shows how much she really loved that song.
Well, yeah, because it's kind of like an ode to her child.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I have to say about that. So my number three, once again, another song that Laura did not write. However, I think her interpretation is miles ahead of who wrote it. Up on the Roof.
Yeah.
Listen, I have heard many versions of this song. I've heard Carol's versions. I think she's recorded it twice.
I think so.
Carol King, that is. And neither of them did anything for me. But something about Laura's and her vocals and the ending high note, and the production on it is just so great. I think that's what makes it. And it, like, it's just a great song. And fun fact, it was the only song she had that actually charted on the Billboard Hot 100. I think it was numbered 93, 94.
And it's so ironic because she didn't even write it.
Nope. Yeah.
What a shame.
Yeah. But overall, love that song. I don't know if she ever performed it live. Probably not.
Not that I know of.
Yeah, I can't think of a time she did. But, yeah. Love that song. What do you think?
I agree with everything you said. It's my favorite version of that song. But it didn't make it onto my list.
Oh.
I don't really have any reason why. I just love all these songs so much that there wasn't room for it, I guess.
Oh. Well, I made room for it because I listen to it frequently, consistently over time. I've listened to it. So, all right, what's your number two?
My second favorite Laura song is And When I Die. So, if you listen to the first episode of this podcast, you hear me just lose it over this song. I think the song is considered a classic for a reason, because everyone can relate to the lyrics. The lyrics are simple yet effective, and they are written by an 18-year-old. That is insane. That is so impressive. And of course, the music is just upbeat, and you got a little like strumming in the back, and it's just a great song to listen to and to sing along to in the car, especially. Like I said, I didn't really prepare much for this list, so I'm not totally sure how to illustrate my love for these songs, but...
No, but I think that's good, because, like, we literally were like, shit, let's come up with the top 10, and immediately did it without much editing, like, as we were doing it. We did it, I would say, in, like, a few minutes. And it's all based on emotion and how we were feeling in the moment. So I think that's good, because, like, then we're not, like,
overthinking it.
I mean, like, well, this song should be on here because this is the one that Laura really liked. And this one should be on here because this is the one that all fans like.
And they played on this song, but I don't like him, and he's on this song. Well, this song's about them, but I don't like them. Mm-hmm. But then Laura said she likes him, but he's on this song.
Yeah.
And if we could really get into it if we tried, but luckily we didn't.
Yeah.
And also, I love how just tongue-in-cheek this song is. She's like, and when I die, just, like, bury me, but it's cold, so, like, bundle me up.
Yeah.
I don't know, she takes such a taboo and otherwise scary topic and makes it so happy and almost sarcastic in a way. I just can never, ever get sick of the song. That's my two cents.
And she also does some really interesting live versions later on in her career in the 80s and the 90s and kind of, like, slowed it down. And it actually, like, comes off really well. I almost want to say there's, like, a harp in it or something. In one of the live versions, someone was playing a harp. Or maybe it was a harpsichord. I don't even remember. I don't know. But it came off very well, and I don't remember where I heard it. But it's out there, people. So my number two, y'all are going to hate me. It's another song that Laura did not write. She didn't write either of them. I don't know why, but this song just, like, once again, another really upbeat Laura song that just, like, evokes energy. And it's the medley of Monkey Time and Dancing in the Street. Now, I love Dancing in the Street. I love all the different covers that have been done. Monkey Time didn't really know it very well until I heard this. And honestly, it's got so much energy. It's got LaBelle on the background. So you got Patti LaBelle, like, wailing. And Sarah Dash and Nona Hendrix going at it. And it just, like, I don't know. There's just so much energy to it, and I love it, and I could listen to it over and over and over again and never get sick of it. And it was just another example of Laura interpreting songs better than any other version I ever heard.
Yeah, this is definitely my favorite version of Dancing in the Streets. I didn't put the song on my list specifically because she didn't write it, because I feel like the songs that I did put on my list, I feel are so impressive because she wrote them herself. So I don't know if that makes sense. But yeah, this song could be on my list if I was in a different mood.
Yeah. All right.
So I guess we're at number one.
Yeah. I wonder if we picked the same song. Probably not.
I hope not. No, you did not choose this song. You didn't like this song very much.
Oh.
It's a bit controversial, but not my number one favorite Laura song is Timer. So, if you heard our second episode, you heard me just lose my mind over the song. Again, there is at least 12 tempo changes in this song. And I think here Laura just demonstrates all of her unique talents, her ability to blend genres together, her ability to shift between time signatures just like at the drop of a hat, and her ability to just scream and wail. I think it's all here. I specifically love when she says, "She got up, she let go, take me timer, shake me timer, timer let it blow. Let it blow." It is just a song, and it takes you for a ride through little tiny individual, like, vignettes almost. And then at the end, she wraps it all up into this one beautiful, cohesive, 3 minute long symphony of a song.
Okay. That was very descriptive. I don't hate that song. I like it, but I never really go out of my way to listen to it. I feel like you're the one that's always putting it on.
And it is a treat to listen to the song. Oh. You can't listen to it too much because it's so, like, indulgent. It's a treat.
Okay. Well, that's your opinion. That's where we differ. So my number one song, and this, of course, is, like, this is subject to change, as are all of these, but Trees of the Ages from Other Spiritual.
Oh my god.
I know you don't really care for that song.
I would not even expect it to be number one.
Well, I love it. Something about it just, like, it hits different. honestly, it makes me feel a certain type of way.
That's how I feel about To a Child. But
yeah.
That's really interesting. This is one that I actually don't listen to very often at all.
Well, I listen to it. Let me just pull up
lyrics.
Yes, because I want to, God, I hope they're right, because we had a problem with that before, where some of the Laura lyrics were not correct on
Apple Music.
Apple Music. So let's see. Yeah, it's just like, it's so fantasy. And it's just talking about the importance of trees, which is like, it's a little out there. And I think, I feel like I've read reviews where they like shit on Laura for talking about trees so damn much in that album.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know if those were interviews at the time or if those were interviews like later on. But I don't know. It's just like, it's just good. I can't explain it.
I know how you feel. A lot of that album is just good because it is.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. There's only like maybe one song that just like, I'm kind of like, eh, it's okay. Well, we've got other ones from Mother Spiritual that are just like, bam, bam, bam. Just like one right after another.
Yeah, so with that said, I want to do some honorable mentions.
Okay.
Because there are just some songs that I'm so eager to express my love and appreciation for.
All right. Maybe we should limit it to like...
Three,
yes. Okay. Because if we do honorable mentions and we don't set ourselves a limit, we're just going to be going through... This episode will be like 4 hours long and it'll be like after midnight.
Yeah.
So give, like, your three honorable mentions.
Okay, one song that I really, really love, but I didn't put it on my list because I feel like it's not really a full song, is from Mother Spiritual again, and it is A Wilderness. Now, this song is beautiful. I feel like Laura paints a picture with her words. It opens up with Laura in a very delicate voice saying, "Cinnamon hills, sweet child, in waves of whisper blue, earth calls to you every day in every day, I'm sorry, every day in every way. Mama's putting on some more paint for a little bit of combat. You ask the reason, you gotta fight for your freedom, sometimes every day in every way." I wish I knew what she was talking about there, what her own combat is and why she's putting on war paint. I have thoughts, but she just sounds so, like, tranquil, and, like, you can tell this is directed at her son, once again. And then later she says, "We go together through the changing seasons, hearts of fire, you know the world needs it, every day in every way." And then she says, "Little darling, zap." And then when she says zap, the music kind of turns and it gets really, really groovy. And then her son actually comes in and starts singing.
Was he singing? No, talking. I thought he was just talking. Yeah.
He's, I don't know, like very young at the time. And he's like pretending to be a crocodile. And it's them kind of just like going back and forth and him making crocodile noises. Yeah, the song is just so precious and so picturesque. And once again, like a warm blanket. Ugh.
Okay, what's your second honorable mention?
I would say... Hold on.
Okay, while you're doing that, I'll give my...
Okay, yeah, good idea.
Okay. So, I'm going to go with the Japanese restaurant song, which is from Live at the Bottom Line, which is unfortunately not available literally anywhere, which is a shame. Literally, I had to bid against somebody on eBay to get the CD, so that way I had it, and I'm glad I did. Mm-hmm. But this song is... I'm pretty sure she's never recorded it, like, as a studio track.
I don't think she has. Yeah.
I think she's performed it a few times live, because I think there's another version somewhere else, but I think this was, like, one of the first times she performed it, maybe. And it basically goes through an entire story of her going to a Japanese restaurant with, I'm assuming, Maria, her partner, and her son, and I think the dog is in there, too, for some reason. I think she mentions the dog. I can't remember the dog's name, but... And it just, like, goes through, like, this whole story, and, like, the main focus is, like, just another night, a day in the life, just another foreign film in black and white. And then it kind of, like, at one point, she, like, the music stops, and then she's like, waitress, yeah. Can I get something? And then, of course, the audience is, like, shitting themselves over this. And, of course, she's like, can I get a big? And then she pauses for dramatic effect, and then big bowl of ice cream, or chocolate ice cream. Chocolate. And she mentions how she quit smoking and that she's, like, hungry all the time now, which, like, I'm hungry all the time, and I don't smoke or have quit, so that's just me. But, yeah, it's just, like, a fun song, and it just, like, it seems so, like, personable because she's, like, opening up about her life. And just, like, hearing the audience reaction as she's, like, singing about being a geisha and a feminist, and the audience just, like, eats it up. And you just, like, wish you were in the audience. Honestly, that whole live album is an honorable mention.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
Because it's got, like, a whole band, and Laura just sounds great. She does Wedding Bell Blues and Stone Soul Picnic. You got some of the hits. You got a Japanese restaurant song. I'm trying to think what else. I don't think she did anything from New York Tendaberry. But there's this cool medley of My Innocence and Sophia, where, like, both songs kind of get, like, cut in half. But it's still a nice medley. But, yeah. So that is that. And what's your second honorable mention?
Okay, this one is from... Gonna Take a Miracle, and it's Jimmy Mac. So I don't know who wrote this song. I don't know who sang the song originally.
Martha Reeves and the Vandellas.
Oh wait, no, I did know that. Sorry, okay. I knew that.
Yes,
I did know that because I hear that version sometimes. This song is just a nice, upbeat love song. You got the doo-wop in the background. Laura sounds amazing. Her voice sounds so full in this song.
Honestly,
it's such an enjoyable listen.
Her voice sounds very full on all of the songs, and I think part of that is because she was singing songs from her childhood. So she really went all the hell in on it, because she sounds like she's having such a great time.
I was going to say, you can tell she's having fun with these songs.
Yeah, and she's got, like, amazing singers backing her up, LaBelle, like... Mm-hmm. Which is that Philly soul, so it fits in very nicely. Yeah. My second honorable mention. Oh, jeez. There's just, like, so many.
I know.
How do I narrow it down? I'm gonna go ahead and say. I Met Him on a Sunday. I'm going to follow you. It's from the same album, Gonna Take a Miracle. It starts out a cappella, and each girl is singing a part, and they're just, like, clapping and snapping. There's, like, no actual music at first. And then all of a sudden it comes in, and it's got a nice beat. And it's just, like, it's so simple. And then Laura ends with, like, a nice high note. And then all of a sudden, it goes into the bells next. It just, like, seamlessly transitions. I don't know. I like it because it's empty, but, like, in a good way. And you really get to hear, like, every, inflection of her voice.
That's a song that I rarely ever listen to.
Oh.
So, I'll have to give it a better chance now, I guess. That's all I have to say. I'm choosing between two songs to put as my last honorable mention. Okay, I'm just going to say Sweet Blindness because that's an amazing song and I can't believe it didn't end up on either of our lists. Yeah. So I'm going to say Sweet Blindness because it's just such a classic and such a fun song. And I love all the chaotic, crazy tempo changes and the piano in the beginning. Just a classic Laura song. So that'd be my last honorable mention.
Okay. Fair enough. It is a classic. We talked that one to death, I feel like.
Yeah.
Last time. So I'm not going to reiterate everything and be redundant. My final honorable mention. I'm stuck between two songs, but I think I'm going to go with this one. Gardenia Talk.
Thank God. From,
okay, you're probably hoping I would say that.
Yeah, because that's the one that I almost just said.
Okay, so Gardenia Talk from Angel in the Dark, which was the album that came out, I think, in 2001, and there was a whole legal battle. Yep. We'll get into that when we get there, because I read all about that, and that was very interesting. But basically, let me just say this about that album in particular. It's very uneven. It's not consistent. There's a lot going on, and it feels like there's two different themes going on at the same time, because you've got the cover songs, and then you've also got original songs, but there's no balance. But Gardenia Talks is a standout. It's pretty simple. Like, there's not a lot to it, but I think that's why I like it, and it's got, like, that, like, Latin flavor, kind of. Yeah,
very Latin-sounding. It's a nice summery song. The lyrics aren't like super deep. You don't have to think about them very much.
Like, basically, Gardenia Talk, it's spring. Ooh la la la, ooh la la.
Let me hear you talk the talk and walk the walk of love.
Yeah.
Gardenia Talk. Yeah. That's the whole song.
It's fairly simple, and I like that about it. All right, so that concludes our honor. We just both got notifications from our respective Instagram accounts to follow Laura Nero Podcast on Instagram. So there's another plug for you, Laura Nero Podcast on Instagram. So that pretty much sums up our honorable mentions. Do you have any closing remarks?
No. Besides, I'm sorry that we didn't really stick to our schedule.
Yeah, our bad.
Yeah, we're so busy right now.
Yeah.
I could go on, but I'm not going to. There's just so much going on.
Yeah.
Both in our lives and politically in our city and country, obviously.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And, like, part of the not the problem, but, like, part of the struggle to get together an episode where we focus on an entire album is we have to do a lot of research.
And listening.
And we have to really analyze the hell out of it. And that takes time that we really haven't had. So we thought we would throw this one at you because this literally takes almost no effort. But it'll still be an enjoyable episode because I definitely know that some of you listening have your favorites, and you've probably been wondering what some of our favorites are.
Yeah. I love hearing other people's, like, favorite songs by artists. I'm just going to plug another podcast, the Kate Bush Fan Podcast. A couple months ago, I listened to an episode of them. I think there was three people, and they all rank their favorite, I think, top five Kate Bush songs. And it was just so interesting because they were all different and I could, like, figure out the patterns from each one and I could predict who was going to, like, what song and off which album. And it was just so cool to hear everyone's unique perspectives on it.
Yeah, so hopefully you can typecast us as well based on our choices and figure out what kind of people we are. But yeah, that's pretty much it. We hope you enjoyed this episode. But yeah, hopefully really soon. We're hoping for 3 weeks from now, we're gonna have our New York Tendaberry episode ready to go. But until then, like I've said, follow us on Instagram, Laura Nero Podcast. We're Passion and Silence, Laura Nero Podcast on Facebook. And you can also email us at lauraneropod@gmail.com. And yeah, that's pretty much it. So, bye.
Excuse me, waitress, can you help me, please? As you can see, the situation has gotten completely out of hand. And also, I just quit smoking and I'm very hungry. Kind of in the mood for. Please bring me a great big bowl of chocolate ice cream.